Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Do you have a special offer for our listeners?
For new subscribers, go to VRTrader.com. That's Victor Robert. VRTrader.com actually stands for volume reversal. And when you place an order for any of our newsletters, enter the promo code 2022 half off, just as it sounds, 2022 half off, and you get 50% off of any of our newsletters, all of them, for any time frame you specify, whatever you enter in the on the order sheet. Also want to make that disclaimer that I normally do about not being a financial advisor nor providing financial advice.
Mark, we've just seen two devastating hurricanes roll across Florida. The death toll, the last I saw from the latest hurricane, was at least a dozen people. It spawned several tornadoes, which were devastating. And you grew up in Florida, and you know what it's like to go through one of those storms.
Well, as a kid, I did. And Hurricane Cleo and Hurricane Donna, the two that I experienced as a kid, and this going back many decades. I remember Cleo in particular. I'm glad you brought it up because it was sort of a life-changing experience. I remember I was living in Miami Beach, and we were monitoring the tracking of the storm at the time, and they said, well, the eye is offshore on an island called Bimini, which is off the coast of Florida, and it's not going to come. So the thing zigzagged and obviously fooled the forecasters, and it came right over Miami Beach. And I remember how, you know, it was pretty nerve-wracking. I mean, I remember the whole house was shaking. I remember the kid holding the sliding glass doors. They were vibrating, something horrible. We thought they were going to blow in on us. We did not evacuate. We were not told to evacuate at that time. It was flooding, but it wasn't horrible, but it was flooding everywhere because Miami Beach is, you know, an island. And so the interesting story is, you know, as a kid, you know, I'm a little scientifically oriented about, you know, weather and geology and all kinds of fun stuff, as I still am. And when the eye of the storm came over, you could clearly see it in the sky above you. It was just an amazing sight. It's like, you know, firm planted in my memory. You know, I just can't get the vision out of my mind, because when you see it, it's really uncanny. You just look up, you see this giant circle in the sky, and you see stars within the circle, and there's no wind. So I went out there, and it was about a 15-minute or so time frame or so that there was no wind. So I took out a barometer I had as a kid. I wanted to measure barometric pressure to see how low it was in the eye. Supposedly that's supposed to be your lowest barometric pressure, and I forgot what it was, but it was a low number, 29-something, maybe 29.10, I think, or something like that. But it was just an amazing experience. You know, there were no fallen lines or trees right out where I walked. I walked out the front door of the house and just looked up, and there it was, this giant hole in the sky, perfectly clear, and then the wind started to come in slowly. It didn't just hit it instantly, but in about 15 minutes it started picking up again, and then came from the other direction. So, you know, having seen it and been in it, and then of course, as I mentioned, I was in another storm, but I wasn't in the eye. That was a little further south from where I was living at the time. But, yeah, it's you know, it's a life-changing experience. What you have to know is you got to prepare. And at that time, we prepared a little bit, but not as much as people do today. And you didn't get as many warnings and stuff. But we did lose power for about a week, I remember. So we had natural gas, so it wasn't like we couldn't cook. The gas was still working, but there was no electricity. So it was. We lost some trees. I remember we had some orange trees and banana trees and all kinds of fun stuff that I missed the years later that were when the salt water came in and killed the trees. So, I empathize with those people in Florida that experienced it. But one thing we did have, and I talk about this a lot privately with people, if you're going to live in Florida or buy a property, you have to buy a hurricane-proof house. And the house I was in was built in the early 1930s, and they used poured concrete walls and, not block, not, framing, not all the stuff that you generally see in construction today, but literally poured concrete walls. I mean, that house couldn't be blown away by a tornado. I mean, it's really the construction requirements or the anticipation, because there was a great hurricane in 1926. My father told me about that when he lived there, because he grew up in Key West. So he told me how it killed the real estate market. It was a, bust, boom-bust situation. I think it was 1926 when the big hurricane came through and killed the boom in Florida real estate. So I was very aware of the risks of hurricanes, having heard the story from my dad years and years before that. But, how the construction, the lesson from that was some of the older homes, not the newer ones. I know when, I think for the name of the hurricane that came through in the 1990s, that blew through and leveled Homestead, Florida, literally wiped it
Hugo.
Off the map. I know why I'm correct. So that just wiped, that the construction was terrible. It was just frame houses and just leveled. But no lessons were learned or anticipated by those people. So I was lucky I was in a concrete, not a concrete block, but a poured concrete wall structure. It was like a little fort in the way they built them, the older homes. Particularly in Miami Beach, I think. They come from they were built in the 1930s, I guess, after that 1926 storm. So, yeah, I have sort of, life experience with this. A few people have, and or at least going back many years ago. And I, it's always a memory, and I always think if I'm going to move back to Florida, if I ever did that, I would want to be in a poured concrete house in some higher elevation if there's such a place existed, because of what could happen. You definitely don't want to be on the right on the ocean. I know everybody's dream is to have oceanfront property, but in the wrong set of circumstances, it could be the worst place to be. I sort of like it out here in Arizona, particularly when I can drive up to Flagstaff, and it's at 7,000 feet, so I don't have to worry about the ocean coming in on me as a kid. But maybe that's why I like the West and the mountains and the altitude. Away from the ocean, having experienced the hurricane literally 100 yards from me was Biscayne Bay on one side, and maybe a half a mile the other way was the Atlantic Ocean. So the water came in from both directions during the storm. So it's a nasty experience. But the people in Florida, obviously had their warning, and they evacuated. It's really funny, all this is happening in a time frame that we expect market volatility. I've been writing about, a black swan event or some extraneous events, and, two hurricanes hitting Florida. And now we're hearing, Israel, may it retaliate against Iran and hopefully, in my opinion, take out their nuclear facilities if they can. I mean, we're just a lot of stuff going on. You got the election coming up, a lot of cross currents there. I'm getting off a little bit from your question, but this is a really interesting time frame we're in. Federal Reserve lowered interest rates 0.5% about a week ago, and then we find out the job numbers came in better than anticipated, and now there's a question whether they will continue to lower interest rates. So, nobody knows what they're doing or saying. I mean, I sort of laugh, particularly when the employment numbers come out. They could probably revise those numbers. I don't believe any of the government numbers, and never did. So it's a wild time right now, and a lot of manipulation in the market, of geocosmic events like the hurricane, and literally God knows what else could happen between now and early November. There's actually a story. I know it sounds, you know, conspiratorial, and you would probably agree it's nonsense, but, you know, are there weather control experiments underway by the governments of the world, and are some events like this hurricane, you know, exacerbated by government intervention? So they generally dismiss that as, you know, conspiracy, but I do know there have been government studies and experiments and weather control, and you just question whether something like that is even possible, or whether, you know, an experiment has gone the wrong direction. You know, they were playing around a little bit, and suddenly the storm became bigger than they anticipated. So, you know, I'm such a contrarian and cynic about the state of the world and the economics and the market my whole life that I don't discount anything. So, but anyway, that was an article I planted in my newsletter. Basically, discounted it, saying, "Oh, it's conspiracy theory; it can't happen." But there have been documented government weather control studies for supposedly defense purposes. So we'll see in time whether we can get Freedom of Information Act report about what really the government's doing, because we're certainly not getting it in other aspects. So anyway, just a little bit of a tangent there.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. A hard day for the markets today. Was that related to the storms, you think? It's going to cost billions to bring Florida back to being back online, yeah, and being a prosperous place, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I put this in my newsletter. You know, often I've observed over the years, I know you can discount today, but on many occasions you see the markets rally when there's a negative event like a storm, and you say, well, why should that occur? You know, it should be a negative. But, you know, you think about it, there's rebuilding that has to occur. Money's going to have to be spent by the government. There's going to be jobs and all kinds of, you know, financial benefits that, you know, ensue following a storm. I mean, there's billions and billions of damages, but governments will be paying for it, insurance companies will be paying for it. But I noticed most of the insurance stocks really weren't down that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chubb, I noticed, and a couple others, Progressive. I didn't see, you know, huge sell-offs in their stocks. So I can't really explain that. You would think the insurance company stocks would really get hit, but that really didn't happen. At least I haven't seen that last day or so. But the event itself should create a lot of building and, you know, business opportunity for those rebuilding all the damage. So in a way, it helps business, creates jobs, and you know, it's not the way you want it to happen. But I have seen over the decades that, you know, I'm looking at the markets during natural disasters, and the market's up or more up than down. So the markets don't react that much. I guess if we had an asteroid coming, and then that was a whole different story, Jim. You know, maybe the end of the world type situation, or we had a super volcano go off like in Yellowstone or something, which is, you know, world threatening in nature. But the general, you know, events, you see the markets tend to recover pretty quickly. And, you know, part of it could be government intervention into the markets. You know, I'm a big follower of the plunge protection team and the equity stabilization fund and government intervention in the markets. And I wouldn't be surprised if they support the markets during, you know, crisis times, just to avoid panic. If you're getting a physical damage, you don't need a financial panic at the same time. So there's something in the back of my mind. But we are in this cyclical negative time frame. Remember, you know, September, October, we're still in October. You know, the big crash in 1987, which we all experienced. We saw that, and we see what other crashes look like during the COVID in March of 2020. And a lot of uncertainty about the election, which I previously mentioned. So, you know, this is a time where things, you know, can move pretty dramatically either way. So I guess you just got to be prepared. You know, I mentioned this weeks and weeks ago. If you just stayed out of the market during September, October, and just went to Treasury bills and just, you know, sit on some cash for a while and just see how things settled out until after the election, for some people, that would make a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of stocks going up, a lot of the stocks going down, and, you know, a couple of the high-tech names are being supported. It seems like Apple Computer won't come down, always seems to stay up or even keeled, and NVIDIA always seems to be held up. So some of the, you know, the bigger names, Facebook, Meta, for example, similar situation, but, you know, there are some, you know, still some internal deterioration in the market here that started right after early October. And for those who follow the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur pattern, you know, you're supposed to sell Rosh Hashanah and buy Yom Kippur. Well, Yom Kippur is coming up tomorrow, this weekend. So that just goes back, you know, decades where, you know, by the way, that's based on the lunar cycle, the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's all created thousands of years ago in terms of lunar cycle. So in theory, you know, you should be a buyer of the market right after Yom Kippur this weekend if it does continue lower, if you follow that one cyclic pattern. So for my own, I'm thinking you got to wait for the election, because I really think, you know, Trump victory will support the market. And I'm not saying forever, it could still come down later after a rally, but I think that would be better long-term for the markets than a Harris victory, which encompasses potential tax increases and all kinds of other socialist Marxist stuff. But hopefully we don't see that result.
What's going on with gold?
Pulling back a little bit. I mentioned this in last week's interview. I put a chart up in the newsletter, you know, and this goes way back to that 1972 story I must have told 20 times on the air about lunar cycles and gold. And you tend to get change of direction in gold around lunar cycles. And there's actually a chart, like I said, it's in the newsletter we put out, that goes back, you know, many years, showing there is a correlation. So I just think it's part and parcel to a short-term cyclic event. And if markets pull back, you know, as I mentioned, babies are thrown out with the bathwater. You know, all markets tend to pull off a little bit. You know, after all, you've had a big rise. But, you know, gold's hanging in there. Silver's hanging in there. I mean, they pulled off a little bit. There hasn't been a, you know, major correction in them. But, you know, that could happen. I mean, we've seen $200-$300 shakeouts in gold over the years, and it, you know, comes right back. So, you know, nothing goes up forever, and gold got really close to my $2,700 target. So, you know, I'd like to see it pull back. It'd give a better buying opportunity. But I think the short term is a result of just short-term cycles and a little overbought condition in the gold market here, having run up as much as it has. So outside of that, I'm a bull, and I think, you know, my next target after the 2700 was 3700, but that could be, you know, a year or two out. Doesn't have to be tomorrow, but we do have to watch the BRICS meeting coming up here in the next few days in Russia, and you know, what kind of earth-shaking stuff they're going to come up with or not come up with should be interesting, because they're looking to, you know, create a new currency backed by gold and, you know, do whatever they can to do business outside of the U.S. dollar. So you get, you know, dozens of nations meeting in Russia. Iran's actually one of them. They're in there, and the BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, the I stands for Iran. So B is Brazil, and R is for Russia. I forget what the others are. You probably know.
Well, I used to be India, here, and C for China, and S for South Africa.
Okay, so that was the original group, but dozens of nations have joined them now, so they're going to have to change the title, because it's going to have to incorporate ultimately all the other nations. So anyway, that's sort of coming up, and that's important both for the U.S. dollar and for gold, and I think that's about a little less than a week away. I think they're meeting, so it should be interesting. You would think that would help gold because of all the talk about that. And they haven't dismissed the use of cryptocurrency as well. I've read that as well. So whatever they can do to circumvent the dollar and transact business, I think they're certainly open for it. So, you know, ultimately the dollar will go. I mean, I don't think it's going now. I think it can still hang around for several more years or longer and still be a central, you know, mechanism for transactions. I don't think it's blowing up right away or anything, but ultimately it will if enough nations of the world are behind a new currency and don't want to do business in dollars. So we've so mismanaged the Western treasuries and we have the central banks like the Federal Reserve, so inept, and government just spending like crazy and printing money like crazy. I mean, you know, the demise is inevitable because of what of the way we've conducted ourselves. So it all started after Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. You know, I mean, everything went to hell after that. And I guess we have to go back on a gold standard. But, you know, by taking us off and the ability to print and print money created inflation and created the ability to spend money you don't have and inflate the economy. And you can argue, well, if we didn't inflate and do all the things that the government and others have done during the last 50 years, maybe the country wouldn't be as big as it is today, even though we're heavily in debt. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. You want to be in debt and have a big booming society and ultimately pay the price of that debt, or you just want to live with the risk that it won't happen tomorrow. So, but ultimately, I think that's what BRICS wants to do, get us on a gold standard and get something that makes economic sense and financial sense. And any common sense economist or businessman would agree with that. But there will be a price to pay because we're going to have to pull in our horns quite a bit to make that happen.
Well, the BRICS will be meeting in Russia October 22nd to 24th. And if you recall, last year they were threatening or promising to bring in their digital currency, 40% backed by gold, 60% would be a mixture of their fiat currencies. And I looked at preliminary trading for this mythical unit so far. It'd be worth about $20 U.S.
Okay. So, and backed by what
40% gold. And as you know, China and Russia have been buying all the gold they can lay their hands on the last 12 years.
Right. But the question is, what value do you peg gold at? I mean, it's an arbitrary number. There's a lot of talk that gold's being transacted in different prices, like it's there's higher prices in China than there are on the COMEX or in the U.S. markets. That's because they're able to obtain the physical commodity there, and they can't do it here because of the inability to deliver on those contracts. So will they peg gold at the current market, or will they peg it at some higher price? I guess they can afford to do that if they control enough gold. And in between Russia and China and others, maybe they can. We don't know where the U.S. gold is, even if it exists anymore, whether it's even in Fort Knox or it's already been sold or given away in the past. So the claim is we still have a lot of gold here. You know, my sentiment is we probably gave a lot of it away or sold it because there's been 20 years of documentation by GATA, Gold Action Trust Association, GATA.org, that there's been overt government suppression of the price of gold to keep it down. And that would only make sense if the government didn't have the gold or found, you know, decided that a higher price would be to their disadvantage. So, I'm a big supporter of the BRICS doing what they're doing. I mean, if we can get a gold backed currency and get some financial stability out there in this world, and I think that would result in higher price for gold ultimately. So I hope they're ultimately successful.
Well, according to my Google research, the BRICS nations, their central banks hold more than 20% of all the gold held in the world. Meanwhile, places like Britain and Canada sold off their gold, all their gold several years ago. We don't have any.
And that's what I suspect may be the case here in the U.S. as well. Mm. I'm wondering, so if they only control the 20%, where's the other 80%? I would think that it would be the other way around. So that's a surprising statistic. It's interesting.
Canada sold off. It even had these very rare gold coins, and they just melted them down for bullion value instead of selling the coins to collectors for outrageous prices. That's typical government, isn't it?
Yeah, right. That's it. You know, they do the stupidest things at the stupidest time. And I remember when the story was out not too many years ago when gold was well way below current prices, even when it was down under $500, that central bankers were selling their gold because they didn't think it had any value and they needed the money for other purposes. So I guess from a contrarian's point of view, you got to be a little nervous that if central bankers, and if you have to confirm this, you know, we read what we read and we don't know whether it's all true or not, but the central bankers are really out there aggressively buying gold, you know, is it a top, just as the opposite of when they were selling it was at a bottom? You know, do they get bullish at the top and do they bearish at the bottom too? There's an argument for that if you're a contrarian. So thing is, we're reading stuff. We don't have confirmed documentation. We don't know really what they're doing, but we do know China and Russia have been doing it aggressively. So, I think the bets are on their side, and we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, as a long-term holder, you want to hold some gold because the trend is toward currency being backed by gold. So I think that's a solid long-term strategy. So if I'm looking for near 4,000 for gold in the next few years, it's certainly worth buying on any weakness if we get it.
Yeah, now people who lost money today, holders of Toronto Dominion Bank shares, TD Bank as it's known in the States, $3.1 billion settlement with the Department of Justice for money laundering. They let the drug cartels just run rampant and launder hundreds of millions at a time, and they didn't blink an eye. And the bank is refusing to comment on it as well.
Right, they actually admitted to laundering money.
Yeah.
And a huge bank like that. So, they report the story, and, you know, I've known forever that most banks are not on the up and up. We saw, I don't know if you remember, in recent years, Wells Fargo here in the U.S., they had criminal activity, and the Federal Reserve actually closed them down on a certain level where they couldn't do business or they couldn't expand. They reopened them just recently. But, you know, one example was they were opening fraudulent accounts, checking accounts, or charging people for certain items that they never authorized, and certain very aggressive marketing on Wells Fargo. So they already proved that they were, you know, corrupt. So, you know, my belief, you know, I have a lot of respect for Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan, but there have been lawsuits, and you can look this up and document it, you know, employees of even that company were caught with their hands in the till manipulating the silver market. And some served jail sentences, and they were employees of J.P. Morgan Chase. So this is all part of the GATA research. You can search for it. So no bank is immune, and you got bad people and good people everywhere. But, this gets to your level of trust. I hope if you had accounts with TD, you didn't lose any money.
Yeah, and banks say, oh, we weren't aware that this kind of thing could happen. I said, you've never seen the movie Scarface, where they were bringing in duffel bags full of cash into the bank? You're not aware that that can happen? And didn't anybody notice?
Right. And it's so perverse now. You have these rules in the U.S., where they may have it in Canada as well, but if you withdraw or deposit large sums of money, I don't know what the minimum is, they can track you and question you or get government the report of your activity. There's a famous book out there put out by one of the owners or publishers at Swiss America, which is a gold company that's actually based here in Phoenix, and I think it's called The War on Cash, and I actually put a little visual in my newsletter to read about how our privacy and our freedoms are restricted by the fact that the government monitors our cash activity. But it's okay for the banks to money launder and do all that criminal stuff, right? But if we go in there, I remember I did this myself during the financial crisis in 2008 and 9. I went into the bank and I asked for all my cash and whatever I had in my checking account, and they didn't have enough there, and I had to come back another day, and I just pulled all the cash out. I said, this bank's going under, I want my cash. Of course, it didn't happen. And they probably thought I was a little crazy, but a lot of other people were running to banks pulling out cash at that time, too. So if you do that today, they'll probably still do it, but they'll report you for your activity, thinking you're doing something illegal just because you want your cash. So it's just a matter of government control. You know, it's okay for them to do what they want, but if you want to move money around, you're considered criminal. It's amazing the way our system has unfolded. But reading that book, War on Cash, is sort of eye-opening for those who don't believe is, big government is looking over our shoulder, and that's the whole argument behind digital currency. You know, they convert everything to digital and there's no cash. That's what the government wants, and just burn all the cash, get rid of it, then they can monitor everything you do. It's just too bad we can't monitor them, because it turns out, as in this TD example, they're the criminals, not us.
Well, I know from filing Freedom of Information requests, you get back, a dozen pages with everything blacked out and then just the date at the top. So
yeah,
even when you
the whole thing.
Yeah. So it's a waste of your money. And British Columbia charges you $10 a page or a request. They've put a tax on requesting the information that should be free to the taxpayers who paid for that information in the first place.
Right. This is the problem going to the Freedom of Information Act, like you say. I mean, there are other subjects I don't want to bring up that, you know, way out there, but when people requested information, they weren't getting what they wanted because it's blocked out. So why they have a law that permits that is way over my head. What's the point of having a Freedom of Information Act if documents are released with blocked out areas that you can't see? I mean, that should be removed immediately. I mean, maybe I should write Donald Trump if he becomes president and ask him to see how he feels about the Freedom of Information Act not allowing you to see everything. I think if we could see everything, our eyes would really be opened into what our governments are doing, which is really tragic.
Also, on the geocosmic front, again, huge solar flares, a solar storm going on. They expect to see tremendous northern lights in Ireland, in Britain, across Canada, deep into the U.S. How bad is this solar storm?
Right. This is what I've been putting in my newsletter for the last few years. We're at a cycle of increasing solar activity, and part of it is, you know, these sunspots on the sun itself, they rotate around the sun, and apparently the position, if they're in a certain position that directs their energy toward the Earth, that's where we get the super risk of that Carrington event. And they are, you know, scientists are concerned about it, and sometimes the sunspots are pointed to other planets in the solar system, not necessarily to the Earth, but you know, I remember there's a scientist that I knew years ago here in Arizona, and I don't want to mention names or details, but before he passed away, he sort of predicted. He said to me, Mark, the Earth is going to get burnt up. There's something coming in his research, and maybe he was foreseeing another Carrington-type event. Obviously, it hasn't happened since he passed away, but he sort of warned me. He says, I see something coming which could, you know, be devastating to the planet. And it could be nothing more than a super solar storm, something we can't, you know, protect ourselves against or really predict. We can monitor the sun. So we're a little, you know, we're complacent about our mortality. You know what I mean? You know, we just don't think that's going to happen now, or it's like an asteroid. It may happen 10,000 or 100,000 years or a million years from now. But the increased activity is a concern. And obviously, that's God's plan here. We have no choice, you know, if we're going to get burnt up through some huge solar flare or series of CMEs, they call them, that's the plan. But it's interesting that you bring it up, because that's, you know, part and parcel to what I like to look at, not just the financial markets and what the economists are saying or what the Fed is saying. I like to look at cycles. I like to look at lunar cycles. I like to do the solar, see what's going on in the sun, monitor earthquakes, monitor volcanic activity, things on the planet that just affect and change our lives, like we just saw in Florida with a hurricane that we have no control of, but it's something, you know, certainly you want to be aware of. So that's, I guess, the excitement of being alive, you know, and monitoring these events and the powers that we really can't control.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
It's always fun. Thanks for talking and seeing a light on some of these areas. We'll talk next week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask those questions for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.